It is Friday, June 14th, 2013. This is Late Night in the Midlands, and I am Michael Vera. This broadcast is coming at you live on the East Coast of the United States, the capital city, Columbia, South Carolina. And, tonight we've got John DiNardo returning with us. He's been on this show several times before, well, at least a few times. And he'll be back with us tonight. We're going to discuss the sun's magnetic field. We're going to get into pole shift and Planet X and all that good stuff. And hopefully I can get some good answers tonight about this Planet X and where it is and how we could see it and all that good stuff. So that's what we're getting into tonight. Massive 12-hour jump in Black Forest fire. This is coming from standeo.com. Headline, a massive 12-hour jump in Black Forest fire from 92 to at least 360 homes destroyed. Most ever in Colorado wildfire. Evacuation area widens. They say that 15,000 acres charred, 94,000 acres under mandatory evacuation, 13,000 homes destroyed, 38,000 people evacuated, and they expect wind gusts of 35 miles an hour. So doesn't seem like it's getting any better there in Colorado. And, you know, every time I hear about these fires, these forest fires, these wildfires, every time I hear about them, it brings back a guest that I had on a while back who was talking about Agenda 21 to us and indicated that that's part of Agenda 21. They want to burn these wildfires to chase people out of the suburbs and into the cities. And I'm sure that's part of the plan, but I also kind of wonder if maybe the sun's getting hotter and maybe that's contributing to some of this as well. I think both are very plausible. I think about it. I toss it back and forth in my head, and neither scenario is good. But I'd rather the sun burn me than the New World Order. John DiNardo next. We'll be talking about the activity on the sun, Planet X. We're going to get into all that in just a few moments. John DiNardo says that his work and studies in both physics and electronics deals with the principles of electricity and magnetism, which are also the principles of our electric solar system, whose recent cometary traffic is the basis of the wild weather that has been steadily increasing over the past decade. The ongoing intensification of our solar system's Earth traumatizing electrical activity is being provoked, he says, by three types of force fields: electric, electromagnetic, and gravitational, all emanating from an incoming comet dragging NASA discovered rogue planet dwarf star, which our sun has for decades been gravitationally reeling in toward Rendezvous around in it the coming months and years. You'll have to excuse me. Bio's kind of scrambling here on me. Over the past 8 years, he says he's been studying the evidence which warns of the approach of the massive celestial body, referred to as Planet X by astronomers, NASA. He says that there could be found a NASA document titled The Search for Planet X. So, is this what's affecting us here on Earth, all our weather patterns, the sun getting, to me, it feels like the sun has intensified as far as temperature goes. And I think that could be one of the things, reasons for so many in such big wildfires. Although I don't put it past Agenda 21 either. Maybe both at work here. But anyways, folks, and we will take your questions and comments right through the show, 347-989-1012. Just call, be patient, and we'll get to you. John DiNardo, welcome back to Late Night in the Midlands. Pleasure to have you.
Hi, Michael. I'm happy to be with you and your audience.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to have you back. You know, and something that's been on my mind for a while, I think on a lot of people's mind, is the sun's activity. Is it getting hotter?
Yeah, it sure feels that way. And, I mean, when you just go outside, I can barely stay in the sun without a hat for more than 5-10 minutes until I feel like I'm burning up. The heat is so intense. And I think everybody, obviously everybody reacts in the same way to this increased solar output. So, yeah, the sun is getting hotter. The sun, we know, modern science is now beginning to learn that the sun is actually an electrical dynamo, an electrical generator. And solar winds, we've all heard about solar winds. And those solar winds are what the sun spews out. Electrified particles are spewed out in waves in all dimensions, in three-dimensional space by the sun, up, down, sideways, in all directions. And we're Earth and all the other planets are feel these waves that are blown out by the sun. And now these waves, the solar activity, it's electrical emissions of not only visible light and infrared light that we're feeling, its solar emissions consist of higher frequency wavelengths and also electrified particles, electrons, negative electrically charged electrons. That's all part of the solar wind. So not only are we feeling the additional heat of this intensified hyperactive sun, but Earth is being impacted by these electrified particles, these negative electrical electrons, and these electrically positive protons. And when they strike the Earth, as they strike all planets, the Earth's magnetic field is affected by these electrified particles. As we know, electricity and magnetism are very closely interact and are related. Excuse me. Moving charge, that is the solar winds, these negative particles that are blown out, these electrons and the protons, impact our Earth's magnetosphere, which is like a huge balloon, an invisible magnetic balloon that surrounds our solar system. And for at least a decade now, very chronically, consistently, Earth has been blasted, and the geomagnetic field around Earth, the magnetosphere, has been blasted by these electric particles. And the effect is that the Earth's magnetic field is becoming distorted, compressed, and all that electrical energy is feeding back into the Earth, because we know the Earth's magnetic field originates in the center, in the core of the Earth. Mm-hmm. Visualize Earth's magnetosphere as similar to the skin on an apple. The skin surrounds the apple. It has a dimple at the top and the bottom, which would be like the north and the south poles. And that magnetosphere penetrates down through the center, the core of the Earth, just like the core of an apple. And when energy hits the outside of the magnetosphere, which is like the skin of the apple, that electrified energy from the sun creates its own magnetic fields and feeds back magnetically to Earth's core. So now you have all this electrical magnetic energy being fed back to Earth's core, heating it up. As you know, for example, a microwave oven is nothing more than magnetic fields, high-frequency electromagnetic fields penetrating the food in the microwave chamber. And what happens to it, of course, is it gets heated up by these electromagnetic waves that are blasted into the chamber of the microwave oven. So the same kind of effect occurs when these energy waves are put into the earth, into Earth's core magnetically. And so this is essentially what's happening. Our sun is becoming very hyperactive.
And there's enough evidence saying that our magnetic field is actually weakening. And what will happen, if I'm right about this, is it'll get so weak until it eventually flips, correct?
Yeah, because, you know, it's a complex situation, but I've done a lot of thinking and studying of this whole of the whole phenomenon of the Earth's magnetic field getting weak and beginning to drift. And then, as many scientists say, once it passes that period where it becomes weak and begins to drift off of its poles, away from its geomagnetic poles, north and south, then it begins to reverse itself. And you have to look at the cause. First of all, what causes the Earth's magnetic field to be generated in the first place? And once you understand that, then you can understand what mechanism would cause it, the magnetic field, to reverse itself. Well, that mechanism that causes the Earth's magnetic field to be generated in the first place is the swirling circular motion of the liquid metal core within the Earth. The Earth has basically a core, an outer molten, mostly iron core. Mm-hmm. And within that mostly iron core is a hard, scientists believe, is a solid metal inner core that's smaller. So it's sort of like a solid, you know, it's a solid metal core within a larger liquid outer core. Now, this outer liquid core swirls sort of like a whirlpool in your blender. If you've ever watched the food or liquefied food in your blender, it sort of creates a circular whirlpool. And that's what happens to Earth as a result, Earth's molten core, as a result of Earth's rotation. And that all makes sense, too. I mean, you could take a bowl of liquid and take an example of the potters, a potter. Do you ever see a clay potter? He puts a clay pot on a rotating pedestal, and a motor rotates that pedestal. As the potter holds the wet clay and shapes it with his hand as the clay turns or rotates. Well, if you took a bowl of water and placed it on that rotating pedestal, you would see the same kind of swirling action that occurs within the rotating Earth. Now, that magnetic field, as long as that swirling motion of the Earth's molten iron core is smooth and regular, then you're going to have a very nice, strong magnetosphere surrounding the Earth. It'll be vertical. The lines of force will be vertical. That is perpendicular to the horizontal flow of the molten core itself. So the magnetic field is perpendicular. Like the skin on an apple, you'll see those little striations or streaks, vertical streaks on the skin of one of those delicious apples or a different kind of apple, you'll see vertical streaks. Those streaks might be likened to the invisible vertical magnetic field lines surrounding the Earth. So as long as that swirling molten core is smooth, it revolves in a smooth swirling action, then the magnetic field will be strong. But what is happening now is you're getting these irregular blasts of electrical particles, negative electrons and positive protons from the sun, which are excessive, more frequent, more powerful than in normal times. And as a result, this energy, the negative electrons and positive protons, strike the magnetosphere sort of like a balloon. I'm likening that skin on the apple now to a balloon surrounding the earth, and that balloon gets hit and it becomes compressed by the electrical energy, which is actually electromagnetic energy from the sun, because of moving particles, these streams of electrical particles from the sun generate their own magnetic field. So you have a magnetic field from the solar wind jousting with the Earth's own magnetic field. And there's a clash. There's a dance between the two, and one pushes back against the other. And the net effect is that this energy from electromagnetic energy being blasted out from the sun feeds back, is coupled back, just like an electrical transformer would couple electrical energy from the one coil of wire in the transformer to an adjacent coil of wire. Even though there's just an air gap, there's no electrical metal connection between the two coils of wire, they're both parallel to one another, still that electromagnetic energy is coupled from one wire to the primary winding to the secondary winding of a transformer. Likewise, that energy from the solar electromagnetic sun's solar wind energy is coupled into Earth's magnetic field. It feeds back, just like into the core of an apple, feeds back, and now it begins to disturb that solid iron core, that nugget within the swirling molten core of the Earth. And that core, that solid nugget, that metal core, deep within the center of the Earth, begins to get pushed, actually pushed. There's a force, a magnetic force, from this field feeding back into the Earth that is nudging that metal solid core off of its center point. This is my theory. No one else has really expressed this theory before that I know of. And I've just put it out. I've taken a lot of time to write it up very carefully. And This is, again, a theory, but it makes a lot of sense because it conforms to the principles that I used to teach in physics and that I've learned in the study of physics. It all sounds very basic to me.
Well, you know, it does make a lot of sense, and there's enough evidence in history to show that the magnetic field has, you know, flipped before, and that goes without saying. But what is the worst-case scenario? Now, I guess I don't want to use the word if this happens. It's more of when it happens. What's the worst-case scenario?
Well, I can read you historical accounts, ancient historical accounts of when this occurred in the past, because, you know, many archaeologists, I should say, are now revealing their studies indicating that these kinds of catastrophes have happened in the past, and they have been provoked by incoming comets. At several thousands of years ago, these things happened at numerous times in the past. So what I'll do, in order to answer your question, I'm trying to find some little quotations that I got from ancient historians. But, you know, it's a little bit worrisome to hear about these things. But before I read them, know that there is a God who has created all of this. He's in control. God is in control of all these events. And God, I don't expect people to believe it now, but just remember it when the time comes, when the difficult times do come. Remember that God loves you. And God says he is bringing this upon earth in order to wake us up, to give us a really strong wake-up call. And if we respond by actually turning our minds and our thoughts to his invisible presence, then he will protect us from all of these catastrophes. So that's what I want you to know in advance of what I'm about to read to you. Quote,
okay.
From the writings of Pliny, P-L-I-N-Y, Pliny the Elder, an ancient Roman scientist, quote, a terrible comet was seen by the people of Ethiopia and Egypt, to which Typhon, or Typhoon, the king of that period, gave his name. This comet had a fiery appearance and was twisted like a coil, and it was very grim to behold. It was not really a star, so much as what might be called a ball of fire, unquote. So this is what these comets look like. And other people like James McCanney have spoken about their studies of what these ancients have recorded in their annals, various civilizations, the Mayan civilization of Guatemala, the Aztec civilization, the Incas of Peru, also the Chinese. The ancient Chinese have recorded in their imperial annals, the emperor recorded these horrific events. They looked in the sky and they saw what appeared to be a dragon or a serpent. Basically what happens is the comet that enters our solar system is electrified. It picks up all of this plasma that is blown out by the solar winds. It becomes plasma saturated. So now you have an electrically charged comet, and that's what gives it its glow, its light, and develops a long tail because it pulls in, coming in through the outer entrance point, the outer gateway, so to speak, of our solar system, which is way beyond Pluto, way beyond the outer bounds of Pluto. And this spherical glowing, sort of glowing heliosphere is comprised of these positive electrically charged protons, a whole gaseous cloud of them forming a huge sphere. So when any comet comes in from deep space, it's going to penetrate that wall of positive protons, and electrically sticky protons will stick to it, just the way your sticky part, electrostatically electrified particles stick to your hands. Styrofoam peanuts, you know, packing in a box, sticks to your hands because it's electrically attracted to your body. So that's what happens to the comet. So the comet comes in, it's loaded with this plasma, it's glowing because of the electrified plasma surrounding it, and it pulls the whole tail of this plasma in with it. But as the comet comes, is being drawn gravitationally closer to the sun, this comet now, its proton tail, positive electrically charged tail, begins to catch up with the comet's coma nucleus, the comet's nucleus itself. Because what's happening is the comet is coming closer to the sun, and the sun has this huge negative electron cloud around it. The sun is essentially negative. It puts out both positive and negative electrical particles, but it has more electrons than protons surrounding it, simply because the protons are heavier. Protons are 2,000 times more massive than an electron, so they go a lot farther out. When the sun sneezes out these protons and electrons, the protons are like a hardball, a baseball player hitting a hardball. It's going to go pretty far if he really gives it a good shot with the fat end of his bat. It's going to go into the bleachers. But if the baseball player hits a Nerf ball, one of those spongy Nerf balls, it's not going to go very far because it doesn't have much mass. Likewise, the electron, when an electron gets sneezed out by the sun, it doesn't go very far because it has very little mass. But the protons go very far. That's why the protons build up at the outer bounds of the solar system into this huge sphere called the heliosphere. And, so now the sun is largely negative because the low-mass electrons tend to stay closer to the sun. They don't get whacked or sneezed very far out. Now this positive comet is coming sweeping in toward the sun. It positive electrified tail is being attracted to the negative electron space charge of the sun, because we know opposites attract, right? Like men and women attract one another.
Yeah.
Like, likewise, this tail starts really accelerating because of the negative space charge of the approaching sun, or it's as it approaches the sun, the negative space charge is pulling it with ever greater electric force. And now the tail begins to catch up to the nucleus, and it begins to look like a roller coaster or a serpent. It starts to, what's the word, undulate. Looks like a bullwhip. It undulates, and that is the serpent effect that was noticed by all the ancient survivors of these catastrophes in the past. The Mayans said they saw what they called a plumed serpent. They called it Quetzalcoatl, or it might have been the Mexicans, called it Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent. And the Chinese, on the other side of the world, the Chinese saw it, and they called it a dragon. And to this day, the Chinese celebrate New Year's with a dragon dance. They have this wild costume that is, or a tent-like, tunnel-like cloth fabric costume that's red like a dragon, and they have men inside of it in a row or in a line, and they jump up and down inside of this costume or this tunnel-like red serpent costume. And it gives the appearance of the coils of a serpent as it's traveling in. That's dragon dance, which is now, they lost the understanding of where it originated. But that dragon dance itself represents a historical record of what their ancestors witnessed in the skies centuries ago.
I see. Hey, John, if there's a way, maybe you could shout at us just a little louder. You're coming in a little low everybody.
Yeah, I'm trying. I guess I thought I was. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, let's see. Let me read on now. They said this to quickly cover what I just said. They saw this fiery appearance in the sky, and it was twisted like a coil. It was very grim to behold. It was not really a star so much as what might be called a ball of fire. Unquote. Now, quoting Caius, C-A-I-U-S, Julius Solinus, a Latin author of the 3rd century, writing about the people living on the southern borders of Egypt, quote, "The inhabitants of this country say that they have it from their ancestors that the sun now sets where it formerly rose." That's kind of scary to think about that. It's kind of incredible, or... Well, it is incredible to consider that concept of the sun setting where it rose. That would mean that the Earth would have to rotate in a different direction, change its direction of rotation. And indeed, it sounds like it's impossible to do such a thing. But if imagine a bowling ball. If you were to take a bowling ball on the conveyor, what do they call it? The track where the ball comes up. When you go to take the ball, before you pitch the ball down the alley, you grab the ball off of this conveyor. Now, suppose you were to let it spin on there, and if it's spinning in one direction, the only thing that could change its direction would be the hand of the bowler, his palm, on the ball, forcing it to change its direction. So it would take a great deal of force, a tremendous amount of force, to change the direction of rotation of the Earth. However, if there were something akin to an external hand, a giant external hand, that could do it. And that hand would be a gravitational force of an incoming huge body. The gravitational pull, it doesn't have to touch the Earth. It's just the gravitational pull of that incoming, intruding, large body acting upon the Earth. As it gets close enough, it will exert enough force to overcome the rotational momentum of the Earth and change its direction. And that is what has happened in the past. These people recorded it. They didn't make this up. But let me just continue on. From Pomponius Mela, a Latin author of the first century, quote, the Egyptians pride themselves on being the most ancient people in the world. In their authentic annals, one may read that since the Egyptians have been in existence, the course of the stars has changed direction 4 times, and that the sun has set twice in that part of the sky where it rises today. End of quote. So here you have the Egyptians recounting the same effect that the earth had changed its direction of rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the kind of worst case scenario that you're talking about.
And this is just from the magnetic reversal?
Actually, what happens to the Earth, if order for the Earth itself to change its direction of rotation, a large body, such as a dwarf star, which is scientists believe Planet X is a dwarf star, a large body comes into our solar system. It gets gravitationally pulled in toward our sun by the sun's great gravitational force field. As it's being accelerated toward the sun, it has to pass over Earth's orbital path. And when it gets close enough, if it gets close enough to Earth, its gravitational force, just the gravitational pull alone, is enough to move Earth, to grab it sort of at a distance now. It's a grabbing force at a distance of maybe, say, 20 million, millions of miles. But that's still very close in cosmic terms. And that gravitational force is felt, exerted by this massive body coming in over a distance of millions of miles upon the Earth. And it actually wrenches the Earth like the hand of a bowler would move or change the direction of the spin on a bowling ball. However, you were right in mentioning the magnetic effect, too, because not only is it a gravitational force that's exerted by the incoming passing body on the Earth, but it's also a magnetic force because this incoming dwarf star has a magnetic field, just as we know that Jupiter has a magnetic field. Jupiter is almost a dwarf star in itself. And so it's not only the gravitational force of this intruding body jerking Earth and moving it off in a different direction of rotation, but it's also a gravitational force that locks on, like one magnet would lock onto another magnet. Earth has a magnetic field, and this object has another, even stronger magnetic field. So it's like a strong magnet getting closer to another magnet. And what is it going to do? That stronger magnet is going to move the other magnet, even though it doesn't touch it, at a distance. That's exactly what happens to Earth. Magnetic.
And, you know, I've seen a really good example of that on a documentary on the Weather Channel, which I'm sure you've seen, where it showed that a rogue planet or what have you, a big object, would come through, and the push from it would actually knock Earth slightly out of its orbit, and which would, just the slightest bit, would change our weather patterns like you wouldn't believe.
Yes, right. I've recorded that. In fact, I put that on my YouTube channel, that weather channels from the series. The series is titled Forecasting the End. And it was really fascinating. The diagrams were graphic and showed everyone how logical it is. You don't have to have a scientific degree to see how logical it is that the gravitational force of a large body could do that, could change, actually pull at a distance a planet away from out of its orbit. And and they said when it comes in, even if it comes in first somewhere around the outer planets, Jupiter, Saturn, whatever, and I suspect that it's coming in around Jupiter, Saturn right now. But nobody really knows except the government and NASA. However, what they said in that Weather Channel special on rogue planets was that if it comes in, it could actually change the orbit of Jupiter. Now, if it changes the orbit of Jupiter, Jupiter is like a shepherd to the inner, to smaller planets like Earth and Mars. So if Jupiter's orbit gets changed by this incoming massive object, now Jupiter starts to guide Earth in a different direction and chain and starts to pull on Earth's and pull it out of its normal orbit, which gives us ideal weather, and changes us to a more elliptical orbit that would cause us to be hot, extremely hot in the summer and extremely cold in the winter, such that life would be destroyed, food production would be ruined, and you know, civilization and humanity itself would be decimated. So, yeah, that's what happens with gravitational forces. Now, it's really of concern and very convincing to see what these ancient historians have said. Let me see. Here's another quote from Tractate Sanhedrin. Now, the Sanhedrin were the Jewish council you read about in the Bible. The Tractate Sanhedrin, an ancient Jewish council. This comes from them. Quote, 7 days before the deluge, the great flood, the Holy One, God, changed the primeval order, and the sun rose in the west and set in the east, unquote. So you have so many people, so many scholars or historians, writers, statesmen, religious councils from various civilizations. I just read from Egypt, Ethiopia, Romans, etc. They're all saying the same thing. The sun changed its direction of its rotation. So it rose in the west and set in the east. From the Holy Bible, quote.
And if there's anything that I get out of this that's positive is that the human race is still here, even though they have documented this happening in the past. So that's kind of a good sign.
Yes, it is. I mean, the survival rate is supposedly pretty low. I mean, others, you know, you've probably heard of James McCanney, and he talks about how the survival rate in the ancient civilizations during these catastrophes, very few people survived.
Yeah.
But, of course, those few people went on to foster the growth of a new civilization. And you know what the Egyptians said? They said that what happens is that everything gets wiped out. So high technology gets destroyed. You can no longer have all the technological advances that we've had today. I mean, people still know how to, still have engineers and doctors, but many of them are killed. There's no electricity. There's no way to continue our very delicate web, interrelated web of technological services and systems. It gets easily disrupted. It's a very fragile system that we have in all sorts of, in our way of life, technologically. So everything gets destroyed, and mankind, the survivors, few survivors, go back to primitive existence. And they have to start all over again, and it takes thousands of years for them to develop again. You know, ancient historians.
And then this thing comes around again.
Yeah, I mean, ancient historians go back to the sinking of Atlantis, which they estimate was around 9,000 BC. And they had flying machines. They had high technology. They were very much like the United States. They had advanced weapons. In fact, not only were they technologically like the United States, they were also an imperialistic power, just like all men. You know, all men become that way. You become great evil men, seize the reins of power just as they have done in this country, and they use it for evil purposes to conquer and destroy, conquer and kill other people, take over and try to usurp all the power and wealth of the rest of the world, enslaving the world. This is not new. This is the way evil men rise to the top and destroy civilizations. It's happened in Atlantis, and it's happening today. They're using the power and wealth of the United States for their greedy, evil, destructive world domination.
That's right. Hey, John, hang on a moment. We've got to take a break here. But when we come back, I want to pick right back up where you left off. And, you know, I'm curious, is, you know, maybe the goal here is we get so many thousands of years to get it together, come together, and find a way to get off of this planet. Maybe that's it. And when we don't, we get wiped out. Game over. Start over. Maybe we have got off this planet before. Maybe some of these crafts we see in our skies are maybe us coming back. I don't know. We'll talk about it next. Late Night in the Midlands, I'm Michael Vera. John, we are back, and what do you think? You think that's the goal?
Michael, I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, it's only a few people who are really evil who rise to the top and seize power. Everyone else, the majority of the people, are peaceful, no matter what nation they come from. Excuse me. No matter what nation they come from, people are peaceful. They want to get along with one another. But few maniacal people are the ones who have... You have to be maniacal in order to struggle and kick and fight and stab and scratch your way to the top. And that's what happens. The greedy, maniacal demons are the ones who seize power, and they steer entire nations into death, into wars and death and destruction.
Instigators in the playground.
Yes. So what we have to do is become active. You know, there are many people like you who are urging people to stop being lazy, because laziness feeds these evil rulers. It endorses them and encourages them, empowers them. They take power and they use our money, our earnings, and our collective power to do their evil and destroy the world. So we have to be active. Governments are all fearsome, as our founding fathers told us. They're fearsome, fearful masters. So we have to be their master. We have to, basically, I don't have any faith in representative government. Because when you appoint a representative, that guy is going to become corrupted. I don't want anybody representing me but myself. And I feel that you probably feel the same way. You want to represent yourself. They should not be passing laws that I did not want them to pass. I just leave the Constitution the way it is and don't pass any laws.
That's right. That's exactly. I feel the same way.
We need to get rid of representative government. I mean, no matter how fail-safe we make it, evidently it fails. It's never safe. It always fails. Look what a wonderful system our founding fathers set up, and look how they perverted it, destroyed it, simply by disobeying, violating the Constitution continuously. So anyway,
that's
you,
right.
And it's not really us that are causing all this, but what happens is we have a God. Now, people find this hard to believe, and I never used to believe it myself until God drew me to him. If you read God's account of what happened to the ancient, his chosen people, Israel, which, you know, that was just a chosen race, I guess, or nationality that typified or drew a portrait. God was drawing a portrait of those people who are today spiritual Israel. It doesn't matter. God doesn't care what color you are, what nationality you are. He doesn't favor one people over another. And the Bible says that God is not a respecter of persons. But those Israelites represented the people who, of all nations, that minority who would find heart in their heart to know that there is a God with them, even though he's invisible, to see all the evidence of his creation. And those people would turn their minds to God, and those are the ones that he calls spiritual Israel. So you and I have that spirit of God in us. You may not even know it. And it took me a long time for me to know it. But when you have this burning desire to speak to others, to try to right the wrongs that exist in the world, to try to speak out against injustice and cruelty and greed and murder, then you are indeed motivated by the Spirit of God.
That's right.
And now you've got the Spirit
totally
in you.
Agree.
And with that, you recognize God's presence, and God's recognition of His invisible presence is what will drive out the demonic spirits. They're also evil spirits from these evil men. So basically, this is a spiritual battle. I know it's hard to believe,
that's
but
right.
We can talk about it more in the future. Well, anyway, getting back to this, God gets so fed up. I should say fed up is a good term to use with God. He knows that the world is going toward its own destruction, which is what's happening today because of these evil rulers that we have dominating the world. They get the high technology in their hands, and then they become a lot more dangerous than Julius Caesar, because Julius Caesar did not have that high technology, nor did Genghis Khan. But now they can destroy the world. Well, God has to put a stop to it. And the Bible, the book of Isaiah, there are many places in Isaiah and in other books of the Bible that show me that these men, they didn't go out and make up this stuff. They actually said, hey, I got these words that came from God. I mean, in my mind, these words were planted in my mind. I didn't make them up. And you could see it makes sense. Like, get this from Isaiah chapter 13. Quote, behold, the day of the Lord cometh. That means like the end where this world is destroyed with the pole shift. The day of the Lord cometh, cruel, both with wrath and fierce anger. So God is angry at what the mankind or these evil men are destroying the world. Fierce anger to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. For the stars, this is really scientifically logical, for the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in its going forth. In other words, during the daytime, the sun will be darkened. And the moon shall not cause her light to shine. Now this is God speaking. And I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity. And I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease. George Herbert Walker Bush, Rothschilds, Rockefellers. I will cause the arrogancy of those guys to cease, and will lay low the haughtiness, the pride, the arrogance of the terrible. Therefore, I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall undulate. Get that. The earth shall, in Hebrew, if you look up the word that's used in the King James Bible, and translate it correctly into its original Hebrew form, it says, therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall undulate or wobble out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts and in the day of his fierce anger. The book of Isaiah, chapter 13. So God is forewarning us that the earth is going to wobble, and there's only one way to do that, to make the earth wobble. If you, as a physicist, you know, a physicist would say there's only one way to do it, either with gravitational force or magnetic force or both, a combination of both, and that's exactly what this incoming dwarf star, Planet X, has, which is estimated to be larger than Jupiter. It has tremendous mass, and we learn in physics, the larger the mass of a body, the greater its gravitational pull is. And it also has a strong magnetic field. So as it passes by Earth, as it's being gravitationally pulled in by the even larger sun toward the sun, it has to pass over Earth on its way toward the sun. As it passes within millions of miles of Earth, which is close, it will exert its gravitational force and its magnetic force to lock on to Earth and yank it. Like a bowler would put a spin on the ball as the bowling ball is released from the bowler's hand. He throws his hand up and puts a spin on the ball, and that's what gives it that hook. Well, the same thing happens with this huge gravitational and magnetic invisible hand at a distance of millions of miles away as it passes by Earth. And that's how you can get the Earth can be made to change its direction of rotation, or not only rotate in a different direction, but what about north to south? Instead of rotating horizontally, it can be made to rotate vertically so that the North Pole rotates down toward the equator, and the equator rotates up toward the North Pole. Now, it doesn't have to rotate that far, but if it rotates vertically even 20, 30 degrees, then you have tremendous devastation. That's called a pole shift, the geographic poles are actually shifted, and this has been proven to have occurred in the past. And some of the most convincing and graphic evidence of that vertical rotation of the Earth, the pole shift, occurred probably 36 and a half centuries ago. Now it comes in every 36 and a half centuries, so who knows which intrusion it was in history. But what happened was, they found mammoths, and you probably heard this story. It's a very common story. It's been reported in science articles, and they even mentioned this story in the movie The Day After Tomorrow, when the people, and there's a catastrophe in New York City, and the stars of the movie, these young people, go into the New York Museum of Natural History, and they see these mammoths, these big woolly mammoths, which are like giant elephants with brown fur and large curved tusks, and the mammoths are, you know, I guess what you'd call stuffed or mounted anyway. And then one says to the other, "Do you realize that these mammoths were found in a frozen under many feet of ice near the Arctic Circle, with tropical vegetation in their mouths and in their stomachs?" Now, that could only have happened, having tropical vegetation in their mouth and in their stomach, yet being frozen in the Arctic tundra under many feet of ice. That could only happen if the Earth instantly or within an hour rotated vertically such that the tropical zone in which these mammoths existed moved in toward the North Pole or the South Pole and froze in a matter of an hour. These mammoths were still standing on their feet. They didn't even get a chance to roll up and curl up as any animal would do when it begins to freeze. It curls up into a ball and lays down on the ground, tries to get warm.
So instantly froze.
They were standing on their feet. It's amazing. And many of them were hundreds of them have been excavated from many feet of ice. They were buried deep under the ice. Yeah, so we know this evidence indicates that pole shift of the tropical region where these mammoths lived, that region got shifted toward the North Pole in a matter of, say, an hour or even less. At the same time, what was at the North Pole was what was at the North Pole then, just before the shift, was Toronto, Canada, Minnesota, the Great Lakes. That was at the North Pole. Because now the other side of the world was Siberia. So, you know, what was tropical around, say, in Russia, southern Russia, got shifted northward with the mammoths up to northern Siberia. And they froze at the same time on the other side of the world. You had movement in the opposite direction. The North Pole moved southward. Toronto moved from the North Pole down to where it is now. The Great Lakes were frozen. They began to thaw. And that's how we get the Great Lakes. So that's the evidence of a pole shift that occurred.
And that's a, that's 1 hour. I mean, that is amazing. I mean, there's no preparing for that. I mean, if that happens, you're going to be in the same boat pretty much the mammoth was. Surprise.
Well, God tells us that. Yeah, God tells us though that before the great destruction that we speak about as this pole shift, people who are you still there, Michael? Can you hear me?
Oh yes.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I hope I'm speaking loud enough.
Yeah, now you are. It comes and goes. You get a little low and then you get higher. Well, so if
have
you
can checked
speak
your,
nice
your,
and loud.
Have you checked your equipment to make sure that it's set properly?
I feel like I'm
shouting at the...
Oh, well, you're coming in fine now. So.
Okay, good. Let's see. God says that before this great disaster occurs, people are going to know about it. God is going to show us signs. In fact, there'll be angels, believe it or not. And there'll be many ways that God will communicate to us his outreach to us, asking us to turn our minds to him, call out to him with our hearts. And, of course, you're going to call out, and I'm going to call out with all my heart, because I'm going to be in terror, stark terror, at what's going on the earth. So, and I know there was one time when I was in combat, in a combat zone, and I thought I might get killed that night. I thought I might not wake up the next morning. And for the first time, I went from being an atheist to somebody who actually talked to God. That shows you that most people will call out to God when they're in terror, in fear of losing their lives.
No atheists in foxholes, huh?
That's right. So God says if you call out like I did, even though I was an atheist and I had did not deserve to be forgiven, God will forgive me at that moment. But I don't want to wait. I don't want to, you know, impose upon his graciousness. I want to bring my heart to God now, every day, as much as possible. Forcibly make myself aware of his invisible presence. So when the destruction comes, he says he will supernaturally, now this is amazing, supernaturally take us up off of this destroyed earth before it goes into self-destruct. He will take us off of this earth. The Bible says that in several places very clearly. But it won't be the body. The body will stay behind. But the spirit, which is essentially the soul, is energy of some form, which constitutes our real being, our real existence. That energy will be taken up in an instant, it says, in the twinkling of an eye. Well, how quickly is a radio signal transmitted into space or across around the world? In an instant, at the speed of light. Energy can be transmitted at the speed of light. Now, people say, well, I don't want to be energy. I mean, I want to be a person, you know. But what our soul is energy housed in a body, in a physical body. And God promises that he will give us a brand new body. And that body, if we think this body is great when you're young, I mean, I'm not talking about when you're old. If we think this young or youthful body is wonderful, and it is fantastic, it's nothing compared to what the eternal body will be when God takes us up. When we call out to him, he will take us up in an instant off of this self-destructing earth, and we will get new bodies. Sounds impossible, doesn't it? It really does. But isn't it impossible that a human being could exist? The most marvelous machine ever known, that a human being could be created? Well, it's happened, hasn't it? And that trees can be created, and planets, and animals, and flowers, and everything was created out of nothing by God. People might say, well, that evolved, but it's even dumber to think that all this evolved than it is to think that God created it. Because how could you have evolved? If you look at your eyes, what a fantastic invention. I mean, mutations cause that. Mutations are destructive. if you get irradiated, your cells of your body become mutated, destroyed, turned into grotesque cells that are deadly and dying. That's what radiation does when it causes mutation. So if our unbelieving, ignorant scientists tell us, oh, we evolved from by mutations. Well, mutations would have could not make some marvelous, create a marvelous machine like the human body from nothing. Mutations would only degrade the human body to nothing, not create it from nothing. So it's crazy to think that we evolved. So the only other explanation is this marvelous body. Two eyes for stereoscopic vision. The reason you have two eyes is because you're able to see depth. The reason you have two ears is to allow you to detect where a sound is coming from. And you have a nose that's able to smell thousands of different fragrances. And God gives us, creates the fragrances with flowers. It's just amazing. So you know that the evidence is overwhelming that we were created. So don't be cynical or skeptical. I urge people not to be skeptical about the ability of God to take this soul zapped up in the sky from the self-destructing earth and give us a brand new body. Because he's done the miracle already with this body. So he's going to do capable of giving us the miraculous new eternal body where there's no more evil, no more new world order. No people abusing you and oppressing you, enraging you every day with atrocities and abuses and crimes against humanity. No more of that. These evil men will be put to rest because the evil spirits, the evil fallen angels that are now dominating these evil men and controlling them like puppets, those fallen angels will be destroyed.
John, I just want to say that I have absolutely no doubt that there is intelligent design behind everything we are and see. I mean, it's all in just such a fine balance. I mean, to think that everything just developed that way. Yeah, I agree with you. That sounds crazy to me.
I mean, if a statistician...
Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay. If a statistician were to give you the odds as to the odds of this whole world coming together with the Earth revolving just in the right distance around the sun so that you have the four seasons and fragile human life could exist at this very narrow temperature range from winter to summer, and with crops being able to grow and flourish with just the right amount of rain. And it's just amazing. The odds of that happening by accident and the human body coming about, with just look at the human hand. It's just amazing. Four fingers and one opposing thumb. And with that hand, four fingers and an opposing thumb, you can play the violin or you can build foundation walls with masonry. Or you could do anything with those hands. You could paint. It's just a miracle what the human hand can do and how the joints of the knee so that your legs can bend and you can walk. You know, you've got legs that are designed and feet that rotate on the ankles so that you can walk and run. And arms that can move. You have two portions of the arm that bend and allow you to pick up things. So the body is extremely well made and functional for a variety of different tasks. Anyway, getting back to these quotes, we all know that legends are the way that many ancient civilizations have passed down their historical records through spoken word, the spoken word, legends, sagas. Well, in the legends of the Toltecs, T-O-L-T-E-C-S, who preceded the Aztecs in Central America, we read of a time when, quote, there was a tremendous hurricane that carried away trees, mounds, houses, and the largest edifices, notwithstanding which many men and women escaped, principally in caves, and places where the great hurricane could not reach them. All this time, they were in darkness, without seeing the light of the sun nor the moon." Unquote. Here's another one from Edgar Casey. Now, Edgar Casey was the greatest prophet. It was just amazing the things that he prophesied in his sleep. He didn't even know what he was saying. He would go into hypnotic trance and be able to cure people whom he had not even met. And they were actually cured. In fact, his cure rate was so phenomenal. And so he was so famous that his son, Hugh Casey, I have him on a documentary, his son Hugh Casey says, they used to bring the mail to his house in trucks loaded with people pleading with him to help save their relative or save them from a disease that the doctors could not cure. So this man had some power of God, and he always said it was from God that he got this power to actually know what was the cause of a disease that a person had without even seeing that person, even if that person were miles away. Sounds incredible, but it's documented. It's all documented in a huge library called the Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Now, me being of scientific background, I had to accept this as being absolutely true because it's been proven. The documentation is all there. Well, when he was in his trance healing people, and, of course, they recorded everything. His wife and secretary recorded everything that he said about the patient and what was the cure that he advised while he was in a trance. However, during these trances, he would also not only cure people, but he would come up with prophecy of what was the things that were going to happen in the future. And I'm reading here from Edgar Casey while he was in hypnotic sleep. Quote, he said this, "When there is great volcanic activity in either Mount Vesuvius or Mount Pelee, then the southern coast of California and the areas between the Great Salt Lake and the southern portions of Nevada may expect within the following 3 months an inundation of earthquakes." So when he was saying, when you see, keep your eye out. In fact, we should be doing this now. Look for volcanic activity in either Mount Pelee, which is in the Lesser Antilles in the Caribbean Sea, one of the islands there, the Mount Pelee, or Mount Vesuvius in Italy. Either one of those, then within a few months, the West Coast is going to be rattled by some massive earthquakes. So if we want to avoid those earthquakes or warn people, we see, just watch what's happening as a precursor, what's happening with these volcanic eruptions, either at Mount Pelee or Mount Vesuvius. Continuing on, from a worldwide address by Native American Hopi Indian elder Thomas Banyakya, quote, "Nature and the spirit of our ancestors are giving you loud warnings. Today you see increasing floods, more damaging hurricanes, hailstorms, climate changes, and earthquakes, as our prophecy said would come. Why do animals act like they know about the earth's problems, and most humans act like they know nothing? If we humans do not wake up to the warnings, the great purification will come to destroy this world, just as the previous worlds were destroyed." Unquote. He's saying the same thing that we're saying here, that these ancient historians told us of previous destructions, and the Hopi Indians echo that same statement. In the Syrian city of Ugarit, Syria, was found a poem dedicated to a celestial body which, quote, "This celestial body massacred the population and exchanged the directions of dawn and dusk and changed the positions of the stars," unquote. That was on a tablet in ancient Syria. This celestial body massacred the population, wow, and exchanged the directions of dawn and dusk, meaning the earth rotated, changed its direction of rotation, and the sun rose in the west, set in the east. Now it's just the opposite. So all these civilizations are saying the same thing. The earth changed its direction of rotation. The Eskimos of Greenland told missionaries that in an ancient time, the earth turned over and the people who lived then were scattered to different parts of the earth. And this was also quoted in the book Worlds in Collision by Dr. Emmanuel Velikovsky, that, again, the earth turned over and the people who lived then were scattered to different parts of the earth. Now imagine taking somebody from Egypt and they get scattered to South America. How could that happen? Well, when you look at the splitting of the continents, you know, take a look at the map, and many people have noticed this strange congruity between the Americas and Africa and Europe, such that if you were to move Europe westward, it would match up with, like two puzzle pieces, it would match up with North America, Central America, and South America. Not exactly match up, because remember, when this great split of the continents occurred, certain coastal areas were sunk beneath the sea. So what you see above land is not an exact matching piece in the Americas with the coastal edges of Europe. It's not exact, but it's close enough to see that originally they were connected. And when you stop and think about the pyramids, how could the same pyramids be in South America as were in Egypt, unless that was all one huge landmass at one time?
Yeah, and they're all over the planet. There's even pyramids being found on the ocean floor now. So,
yeah, and I have a videotape of that going back to, that tape was made in around 82, where they took this yacht above to the, I guess it's off the coast of 40 miles off the coast of Florida. And the reason they knew how to get there, this is interesting, there was a psychic, and this is, we find it hard to believe, but when we see the evidence, we have to believe it. This psychic, his name was Alex Tanis. I think he's passed away now. This was way back, maybe in the 80s, early 80s. Alex Tanis, T-A-N-O-U-S. They asked him, he had been used by police forces to locate missing people. That's how reliable his psychic powers were. The police departments used him to locate missing people. So these people, back in the early 80s, many scientists and people in the movie industry knew that there might be a possibility of a pole shift. They thought the pole shift might be caused by an alignment of planets, of Jupiter lining up with Saturn, lining up with Mars and Earth, and they thought the combined gravitational pull of all these planets in the year 2000 would pull the Earth off of its axis and cause global destruction. They didn't know about Planet X then, but they were on the right track. So they wanted to find proof that this pole shift had occurred in the past. So they got Alex Tanis, and Alex Tanis on this videotape says, "I went into the Bermuda Triangle. A part of me went out of my body and swam deep beneath the ocean. And I saw the most marvelous ancient civilization down below the ocean. I saw marble staircases, spiral staircases, marble columns, marble roadways. It was the most pyramids. It was the most spectacular thing I've ever seen in my life." he did an out-of-body experience. I mean, I've never believed in that, but I can see the proof of it from the testimony of Alex Tanis. And then in this videotape, they said, well, a lot of people did not believe Alex Tanis, but we went out to the coordinates where he had described to us, which he had described to us, 40 miles off the coast of Florida. It's called the Bimini Road. And sure enough, they found a 1,000-yard-long road made of marble. Of course, it's now encrusted with coral and everything. But when he saw it in his vision, he saw it as it existed thousands of years ago before it sunk beneath the sea. It was a part of it. It was then a part of the ancient continent of Atlantis. And they stopped the boat right there, and they used sonar to look down, and they detected this undersea pyramid with the capstone missing. So with the capstone missing, that tells you that this was Illuminati. This was the ancient occult practice that was worshipped and followed thousands of years ago. So the evil mankind has not changed, because the same evil spirits that ruled mankind over the millennia are at work creating these occult worship symbols, such as the pyramid without the capstone. But they use sonar, and they look down, and you actually see on the videotape a video sonar picture of a pyramid deep on the ocean bottom, 40 miles off the coast of Florida. This pyramid has no capstone. It's just incredible, and you have to believe it. So there's more evidence that the Earth was sunk.
Yeah, I was just going to say that should be enough for people to realize. And I think what a lot of people feel is, you know, they especially when you're young, you've got this feeling of indestructibility, like, well, that can't happen because I'm here. And I have news for people. Well, it doesn't matter who's here. When it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And it is going to happen at some point.
Well, you know, it seems that some point is getting close to us in time right now. Because if you talk to some of the young people that, you know, we think are, we have a, you're right, young people have this feeling of eternality, indestructibility. But if you see some of them, many, many thousands, and a growing number are being subjected to these horrible weather disasters, entire houses, and we've all seen it. It's horrible. It's sad. It's tragic. We feel for those people. But these young people see their house turned into a pile of debris, wreckage, so grotesque that you just can't imagine how could they ever clean up all that wreckage that was once a house. And now they've got no place to live. Those people are painfully aware of how destructive this world is becoming, the weather. The tornadoes are super tornadoes now. It's all evidence. It's all evidence right before your eyes in living color. And some people, unfortunately, people have actually felt the pain of the evidence. Super tornadoes, miles wide. They never used to be that wide. Tornadoes used to be much narrower. Tornadoes were never had the high wind speeds that they do now.
No, they look like hurricanes on the land, though.
Yes, that's another thing. Land hurricanes, they call them derechos. Derechos were, I never even heard of a derecho in all my life. And now we're getting them. But these hurricanes, the one that destroyed Moore, Oklahoma, oh, how tragic. That had wind speed of around 300 miles an hour. I mean, it's, you know, that's a circular rotational speed. I mean, that is incredible. I mean, that's a record. I think that broke a record. There was nothing ever has been recorded at that high a velocity, no tornado. And the wind,
yeah,
like,
you know,
miles wide.
John, I've looked at, you know, yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, I always thought of tornadoes as these you know, somewhat small funnel clouds, and if you were in its path, you were in trouble. But, you know, now it's like you said, they're so wide that, you know, you're going to be in its path. It's like we just said, it's like a hurricane just traveling across land. It's unbelievable. I tell you, I watch the Weather Channel, and sometimes I cannot believe what I'm seeing. And I think a lot of, you know, especially the younger people, again, they look at this and they don't know any different. They think it's normal. It's far from normal.
Yeah. I mean, like, here's another crazy anomaly that shows the Earth is in trouble. These experienced weather, hurricane or tornado chasers, these tornado chasers were playing it safe. They knew that if you stay on the south side, I think the Weather Channel was saying this, if you stay on the south side of the tornado, you're okay because the tornado always moves toward the northeast. However, for the first time ever, the tornado, instead of moving northeast, it moved south. And it killed three very dedicated, experienced tornado hunters.
Yeah.
Two brothers and another guy. I think they worked for the Weather Channel. Then Mike Bettis, one of the leading anchor weather meteorologists on the Weather Channel, he almost got killed. His car got tumbled 200 yards, tumbling, like a tumbleweed.
Yeah.
And he survived.
And these are guys with experience.
Yeah, I mean, he feels that God saved him. He said that in an interview. He said, "I thought I was dead." I mean, just tumbling like that, even though the airbags deployed, he still felt he was going to be killed, but he survived with, he's walking around with no injuries at all. Well, anyway, so the weather's getting horrible. The flooding is epic levels. I mean, record flooding over and over again. It, you know, far more than we've ever had in the past, far greater water levels. Cars being washed away day after day. You see this all over the country. I can't even begin to tell you all the different places that have been severely flooded. Homes destroyed. We all, you know it. You see it. I don't even have to go into details, right? And then the drought.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right next door, one state away, you'll have a drought where the ground is so cracking so much, a long-term drought, that the ground is shrinking and cracking and the foundation of the house is collapsing. Because the earth is so dry. That's close, right, you know, adjacent to a flooded area.
Yeah.
So it's really, we know the earth is in trouble. We don't even have to, I mean, I could go on, we could go on and on and spend 2 hours talking about the weather anomalies. If people will believe, they have to, that the earth is in big trouble. And getting back real quick, I'll give you my theory, and I've written this up formally and trying to present it to many people who might pass it on to others so as to warn the world. My theory that I began to explain before as to what is happening to Earth's magnetic field. Well, the magnetic field's getting messed up because of the swirling molten iron core of the Earth that I talked about before. The solar winds blasting and impinging upon Earth's magnetic field. The electromagnetic energy from those solar winds impacting Earth's magnetic field is feeding back, just like from the skin of the apple into the core of the apple, into Earth's core, and that energy is not only heating up the Earth's core, but it's putting a force, budging force, nudging force on the solid iron core at the very center of the Earth, which is immersed in the liquid molten iron core, that center iron core, that pit, more or less, of the Earth, is getting nudged off of its center. And as it gets nudged off center, what happens? It, instead of sitting there in the middle and just rotating nicely and allowing the molten iron core to swirl nice and evenly, in a swirling motion like your blender, what happens is that the iron core gets shifted off center, and now the iron core is not only rotating daily, but it's revolving. And that's why you see the jet stream looking like a huge wavy roller coaster. If you look at the weather map on the Weather Channel, the jet stream always looks like a huge roller coaster. Never used to look like that decades ago. It's not supposed to look that way. That, according to my theory, is because the Earth's solid iron core has been shifted by this magnetic energy, electromagnetic energy from the solar winds, feeding back into the core, shifting the core off center, and now we've got like, hey, you remember seeing a jumping jack, right? Jumping jacks when you're...
Oh, yeah.
What it is, it's like an empty capsule, like a pill capsule with nothing in it, but it has a little ball bearing, so that ball bearing can shift the weight of that empty capsule, and it looks like it's jumping as the ball bearing rolls inside of the empty capsule. Well, in a similar vein, you have this ball rolling around, rotating around, and causing all that molten iron that should be swirling nice and smoothly, causing the molten iron to slosh around and form waves. Now, the molten iron itself is what generates the magnetic field, because the molten iron is comprised of free electrons. Iron is an electrical conductor, and when you melt it, all the free electrons that would normally flow through, like in a wire, those free electrons are moving. And we know what moving electrons, swirling electrons, constitute. It constitutes electric current. You can create electric current by taking a lot of electrons and stirring them up in a big circle if you had the power to do that. Stirring up like you would stir your coffee with a stirring stick. Okay, all these electrons, like you're stirring coffee in a stirring stick, they would swirl in the molten iron, and the movement, circular movement over this mass of free electrons in the iron, in the molten iron, would constitute an electric current. Now, when you have this swirling electric current inside the Earth's core, that's what generates the magnetic field that surrounds the Earth. So if that solid iron ball at the center of the Earth gets knocked off center by the sun's impacting electromagnetic energy, then that solid ball starts to move around, it's off center, it starts to slosh around and create waves in the molten iron, swirling molten iron. So now you've got a wavy, sloshy molten iron. Now if it's the molten iron sloshes enough, as that ball moves farther and farther away from the center, and that ball moves farther, closer to the edge of the molten iron swirl, now the sloshing of that molten core gets so accentuated, so radical, that you have waves that fall back on one another. Now some of that swirling molten iron is going in the opposite direction. Instead of swirling, like clockwise, some of it is sloshing back in huge waves, curling waves, like surfer waves, that go back in the opposite direction. Well, that generates a reverse magnetic field. So the polarity, instead of going from north to south, goes from south to north. And that's how you get a pole reversal. That's my theory. Nobody else has ever put that out, to my knowledge. And that's my personal theory, and I believe it's true, and I'm hoping that others will see it and examine it to let us know that, hey, this is why we're getting all this. The Earth's solid core is off-center because of the sun, blasting from the sun.
Yeah, and I should also add that magnetic field, as we know, protects us. Dearly, and shields are down. We're vulnerable.
Yes.
And we've got a call, John, and I want to take it. But go ahead and comment if you wanted to. But shields down.
Yep.
All right, Kathleen in Florida, you are on the air. Welcome aboard.
Hi, everybody. This is awesome. This is a great show. I love it.
Thank you.
I grew up in South Florida near the Bermuda Triangle, and there was always stories about compasses going crazy and, boats losing connection with, their radios and stuff like that. But I went to high school from the year 79 to 82, and during one point, one of our friends was out on a boat fishing with another guy, and they never came home, and they never found the boat, and no one ever knew. I mean, they just disappeared virtually. So I guess there was I would say probably like a year or two that went by, and my friend and I were in the car driving by his house because he only lived a couple blocks away. And it was always kind of weird, you know, when we drove by, because he had a brother, and his brother was still there, but, you know, our friend was gone. And it was dark, and we were going past his house, and there was, like, a little cloud, probably about the size of, like, if you put your arms in a big circle in front of you, no bigger than that, maybe kind of an oval shape.
A cloud.
Not thick. Yeah, not thick and not thin. But we just drove by, you know, we just drove by his house at residential speed, you know. And all of a sudden, this cloud came from his yard and came across the street and went underneath my vehicle, right where the driver's side door was, and then went underneath and then went out from the passenger side underneath the car. And my friend, my best friend, was driving with me, and I said, "Did you see that?" And she said, "Yeah." And we just were like, "Whoa," you know. And we just assume that, you know, that was our friend. But when you talk about the Bermuda Triangle and all those disappearances and stuff from years ago, and now you talk about how they found the pyramids underneath there and stuff, do you think that has any connection?
It very well might. It's a great mystery.
And stuff?
I'm sorry, what?
You think that has any connection with the pyramid that they found, you know, just what you were talking about?
It's a great mystery, really. I have not studied it, so I wouldn't want to make any kind of statements, but certainly I've had some speculation. It could be related to large magnetic deposits, iron deposits, beneath the seabed around there. And it could very well also be related to the civilization that existed that was sunk off the coast of Florida. You may be right. We know they had advanced technology back during the time of Atlantis, this great ancient empire which was very much like our current United States, in high technology and great world. It was a great world power. They had weaponry, and I should really refer to some of the Edgar Cayce, the great sleeping prophet. This psychic is accepted even by scientists. I spoke of him just a while ago. But Edgar Cayce, in his trances, he talked about what happened in Atlantis thousands of years ago before the great sinking of Atlantis. And he mentioned crystals that they used. They had a more advanced technology that used crystals. And it was dealing with energy weapons and all kinds of weird stuff, which our government, believe it or not, it must be true, because our government has secretly sought this ancient technology. So you may be right. There may be something magnetic or some kind of substance that was related to that ancient advanced technology that they had, because there was a pyramid off the coast. They did indeed discover at least one pyramid 40 miles off the coast of Florida. Now, where was the location? Was it near the Bimini Road, which I spoke about?
I'm not sure exactly where the Bimini Road is, but when we were kids, Bermuda Triangle is what we were always told was off the coast, and I lived in Boca Raton, so it was not too far off the coast of where I was, and then there was a triangle, you know, three points that were, you know, where all these things had taken place, where they just kind of referred to that as the Bermuda Triangle.
So that was off the coast of Boca Raton, right? About how many miles?
Not
about
far.
About how many miles off the coast?
Not far, and I can't remember exactly, but we always knew that it was there, and I'd been over it many times. I'd been fishing in it many times, and we had never ourselves experienced anything weird. But, you know, we used to make jokes about it and stuff. And then, you know, when our friend went missing, we thought that was really bizarre.
Well, when you look at the records of all the planes that were lost over there, it seems their instrumentation went haywire when they got over that Bermuda Triangle. So it could very well be something magnetic that was affecting it. But now how would magnetism cause that boat to capsize? It could be whirlpools. Have you ever noticed any disturbances in that water when you or anyone else was out there? In fact, you may be able to read stories about the many people who've been boating out there if they have noticed any whirlpools or any turbulence, unusual turbulence that has occurred. Is there something like that that you know of?
I personally saw a water spout while I was driving down A1A, and it was probably 100 feet off the coast, maybe two or 300 feet, and it was really tall. I can't tell you how tall it was. It wasn't like a mile or anything, but we could see it while we were driving down A1A, which runs right along the coast. And so when we caught up to it, where we thought it would be at the next opening where there weren't any trees and stuff, of course it had vanished, but that's the only thing I ever saw, but that's pretty common. But, I mean, it wasn't like a windy day or anything. It wasn't like there was, it was just kind of a sunny, regular day. It wasn't a stormy day or anything. And we only saw it for a couple of seconds, and then it dissipated by the time we got to the next, you know, opening in the trees. So.
Well, one possibility is the magnetic, if there's magnetic deposits beneath the seabed, there could be an electrical effect with the magnetism and the magnetic forces under the seabed and creating some kind of an electrical column, for example, that would protrude upward from the seabed through the water up to and above the surface of the water. Now, this column could very well create a small whirlpool, not only a whirlpool, but an air cyclone or a small funnel cloud, I should say, just like a mini tornado that people might not even notice it. It might come up from the sea, and I'm just speculating, but the speculation is based upon principles of electricity and magnetism and how that would affect, create whirlpools, because we do have air is charged electrically. We know that when moisture rises into the clouds, what does it do? It carries with it electrons, and those electrons build up in the cloud, eventually discharging to Earth as lightning. So we know there's electrical effects in the air. Now, if this magnetic field were to create a vertical column that goes upward through the water and above the water, it could disturb the air and cause a circular motion. We know that many hurricanes have that circular motion from the ionosphere discharging to the salt water. Salt water is a very good conductor of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And that disturbance could cause a whirlpool, a mini tornado that could take the boat, flip it up in the air, and capsize it.
Right,
in a matter of seconds.
They never found it. They never found it. It was never, ever found.
Right, so if it got capsized in that way, either by a little turbulent funnel cloud that was created maybe for a short period of time, or by a vortex swirling whirlpool in the water that was created for a short time, like it's called an eddy, could capsize the boat and sink it rapidly.
You know, and I wonder, John, if it's possible that the magnetic force could be so strong that it just, you know, like an MRI, if you've got metal in your body, it'll rip it out. If maybe at times it gets so strong that something would steal on it or what have you, a plane, a boat, and it just sucks them down.
Right, and that's a good point because, you know, regarding your problem, your story, Kathleen. Is it Kathleen?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Regarding your story, and Michael just caused me to realize that planes are also taken down by the Bermuda Triangle. Planes have disappeared. And so it may not even have been a vortex of water, but just a cyclone or a funnel cloud that was created momentarily, and that took the plane and just brought it down and just pulled it right down through the funnel into the ocean. And that's maybe perhaps how so many planes have been lost. So just from the many disappearances of airplanes, we can probably make a educated guess that it's caused by turbulent air, which is electrically generated somehow by something beneath the seabed.
Well, you know, what got my mind wondering was when you said that, because I didn't know this until we were speaking of it a few minutes ago, about the ancient civilization that they found, and isn't that kind of where the Bermuda Triangle would be? You said, what did you call it, Bermuda Row?
Oh, the Bimini Road, yeah, it's probably in that area. I don't know how far up the coast, but I know it was 40 miles off the coast of Florida that they discovered the Bimini Road.
Well, then, Bimini isn't too far from the Bahamas and Florida, so I wonder if that's actually included in the Bermuda Triangle the way they used to have it mapped out. But another thing that started making me think was there was a gentleman on the show last night speaking of the yellow box. Were ancient machines and stuff, and I'm wondering that if maybe one of those things may have been in operation and underneath in that city from ancient times and may have still been in operation, or maybe something set it off and it made it work. Isn't that part of like time travel, or, you know, like magnetic force or magnetic fields associated with that too?
Yeah, it's an interesting theory to investigate. I haven't studied it, so I don't know, but I know, you know, from the studies of Atlantis, they did have this high technology that utilized crystals. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I'll bet there are people who have been studying this today, especially we have many researchers in this area, that of the field of ancient knowledge that you're referring to, that might shed more light on this situation. But, you know, a couple things come to mind is that fact that many coastal areas have been sunk. It's not just off the coast of Florida, but it's also 2,000 feet off the coast of Cuba. 2,000 feet deep off the coast of Cuba, they found land masses sunk. They found land masses sunk off the coast of Japan. And also off the northern coast, James McCanney has stated a number of times, off the northern coast of Australia, the U.S. Navy has been conducting secret salvage operations of the lost continent of Atlantis, sunk off the northern coast of Australia. So this is all around the world that these sunken coastal cities have been found, and you would expect that. When you stop and think of what happens, now just picture the Earth as a huge, the way I like to make things as graphic, give graphic examples so people could see vivid pictures in their minds. Picture the Earth as a huge balloon filled with jello. Now, assuming that the balloon would have to be pretty strong to hold all that jello. Now you rotate the balloon, just as the Earth rotates. What would happen to the shape of the balloon? What would your mind's eye tell you? What happened to the shape of the balloon as that balloon is rotating the way the Earth rotates?
Yeah, it
would
stretch,
would it remain round?
A little bit.
Stretch. So it would not remain round, right?
Would stretch and get oblong.
Right. The equatorial area of that balloon would bulge out, and it would appear, the poles, the north and the south pole, would flatten out, right? So you'd have like a flattened, widened circle, sort of almost like a tire, an automobile tire laid sideways. Okay, so now what happens is a planet comes by, a huge dwarf star. And this dwarf star, incidentally, because the scientists, before they were muzzled, scientists such as Dr. Harrington, the late Dr. Harrington, and others said, they believe that this object is a brown dwarf star that's being gravitationally pulled into or toward our sun. If you look up the definition of a brown dwarf star, the puniest brown dwarf star is about 3 Jupiter masses. One Jupiter mass is 318 Earth masses. So three Jupiter masses is some getting close to 1,000 Earth masses. This 1,000 Earth mass dwarf star comes by Earth. It exerts a gravitational pull as it passes over Earth, like a bowler would put a spin on the ball. And it jerks the North Pole southward, so that now the North Pole, and we talked about, remember, Toronto was at one time, Toronto and Minnesota were one time at the North Pole. Well, it takes that North Pole where it exists today, which is frozen, and it moves it southward in a matter of an hour as it passes by. So now the bulgy part of the Earth is no longer in the same position. What was the equatorial bulge now becomes a different portion of the Earth, so you got a new equator that's formed. And so the whole bulgy shape of the Earth gets transformed, gets shifted, and the equatorial bulge occurs on a different portion of the Earth. You can visualize that in your mind, right?
Right.
Okay, so now what was Quito, Ecuador, and South America, the northern part of South America, all along the equator, that's moved out of there, and now New Jersey and North Carolina become the new equator. Now New Jersey starts to bulge outward, and land masses start to rise up from the sea off the coast of New Jersey and New York. And because it's bulging out there, that's the new equator. Whereas the old equator, where the northern part of Venezuela, for example, northern part of Central of South America, that bulge now goes southward and it begins to contract. All that land around Venezuela sinks beneath the sea because the bulge is no longer there. You can visualize that probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So now, this is why you got land masses that sink in some areas and other land masses that actually arise out of the oceans. And incidentally, what that reminds me of is an ancient scripture, not even a scripture. It's from an anthology. It's a book of written by men, historical records, ancient historical records of the past destruction. And I'll paraphrase it. I have it here somewhere in one of the books, but rather than find it right now, I can paraphrase it. It says, these ancient people wrote that the destroyer will appear again. They call it the destroyer. They said, you know, normally in normal times, the Earth rotates normally and the stars can be predicted. The motion of the stars can be predicted simply because the Earth is moving in a regular way. And every so many years, you can see certain constellations out there. But a time occurs when the destroyer approaches. Now the stars become chaotic and they begin to swirl around in the sky. At first, very slightly, they begin to shift, and you can no longer predict the position of the stars. That's because the Earth is beginning to take on a slight wobble. But as the wobble becomes more accentuated and rapid, then the stars actually appear like they're swirling in the sky chaotically. And they say when the destroyer approaches, we will cause blood to drop upon the Earth. Now that's flaming meteors. Meteors get hot from the air friction as they plummet to the Earth. Meteors that are being gravitationally dragged in by this body, they, it looks like blood, flaming blood. And the Bible talks about hail mingled with fire and blood is cast to the Earth. That's what the book of Revelation talks about will happen in these end times. Fire mingled with blood. So when blood drops upon the Earth, the ancient Colburn historians state, then the destroyer is passing by. And mountains will open up and belch forth fire and ash. Seas, land masses will rise out of the sea and the seas will boil. It says the sea will be swallowed up by the land, meaning that, wow, all of a sudden land starts jutting up out of the ocean and the seas begin to boil because of the heat that's generated within the Earth and coming from these comets, magnetically, magnetic heat, just like a microwave oven would magnetically bombard a plate of food and heat it up. So this is what happens when the Earth begins to wobble and swirl around. So you have a whole shifting, land masses sinking and land masses rising.
I see. Okay. Kathleen, anything else?
No, I think that was just really interesting, and I thank you for explaining that all to me and give me something to think about.
Yeah, I would say, to just judging by the loss of aircraft, the many aircraft that were lost over the Bermuda Triangle, this is a sort of probably, very possibly, an air turbulence phenomenon caused by electromagnetic forces, possibly. Again, I don't know, but it's, you know, it sounds like credible or plausible speculation. Magnetic forces deep beneath the seabed that are causing turbulence in the air, and we know the air can be electrically excited, that would cause whirlpools and the air swirls or funnel clouds, and we're seeing a lot more funnel clouds now, that would pull an aircraft and pull it right off of its stability and bring it into a nosedive, actually.
Right. Yeah, suck it right in. Yeah. Okay.
So,
well, again, Kathleen, thank you. Interesting. Interesting stuff.
People should stay away from the water. You know, we're getting so many reports on the Weather Channel. It seems like every day. Water turbulence, undertow, currents that are causing drowning people. Huge waves. That's another phenomenon. The massive rogue waves out at sea that are capsizing ships. Yeah, this is becoming more frequent. And then also waves on the shore that are like tremendous. People are getting, surfers are getting ruined, hurt, injured, killed, drowned from these waves. And they say, you know, undertow is horrible. It's very dangerous, so people need to stay away from the water. I would not be boating anymore if I were someone who likes boating.
Yeah, I would. I might reconsider boating myself. I don't boat, but if I did, I may be reconsidering it. I don't know. Hold on with us, John. And Kathleen, thank you so much for the call. We've got to take one last break, and we'll come back and finish up with John. This is Late Night in the Midlands on the L&M Radio Network. The phone lines are open, 347-989-1012, or on Skype. Either way, you've got to press 1, so we know you want on. We'll be back. The planet itself, the weather patterns, the activity, the solar system activity as well. I mean, look at the sun and the different things going on there. We got fireballs coming, not only close anymore, but impacting us. So, you know, there's a lot going on. And whether you buy the whole Planet X thing, or if you're more of a, you know, it's Jesus is coming back type deal, however you view it, the fact of the matter is you cannot deny that these changes are happening and that there is evidence, and plenty of it, that these changes have taken place before. Now, me, you know, I never deny the fact that we are going through some trying times here on this earth, not only with political structure, but most definitely with Mother Nature, if you will. You know, there's a lot of people out there who will tell you that they know exactly where Planet X is and that it's coming, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. Whether it be the aliens told them or whatever it might be. And I'm not picking on anybody. I'm just saying that there's a lot of people out there with different ideas on this. The fact of the matter is we really don't know when or where or how. We just know that it, you know, something's going to happen. It's happened before on this planet. It's going to happen again. So it's not that I dismiss any of it. It's just, I'm a guy who likes facts, I like proof, and a lot of what John's saying here tonight does lay out some groundwork towards proof that we're going to go through the same things our ancestors have gone through on this planet, and that's magnetic pole shifts, and that's actual pole shifts, like the woolly mammoth, frozen, with fresh vegetation in its mouth. I mean, you know, that happens pretty quick for the woolly mammoth to be frozen like that. So, you know, I'm not in denial, that's for sure. And I know that I'm not Superman. I'm not going to, you know, who knows? I don't know if I'll live through the changes or if I'll even see them in my lifetime. I assume I will. It certainly feels like I will. But whether I survive or not, I leave that up to God, because I do believe in God. I do believe in a higher power, and I don't believe, however, that we're going to get help from God or aliens or white hats or any of that unless we stand up and help ourselves. So if you're just sitting there, that's like the guy who sits at home and says, well, I want a job really bad, and he's waiting for somebody to knock on his door and offer him one. And he never once opens up to help wanted ads. You're not going to, very rarely does that type of help come along. So, you know, people need to be their own leaders. Don't be followers. Don't just believe everything you hear. Look into it. Research. I mean, what else have you got to do, right? You know, there's nothing like looking into something and trying to confirm it for yourself. And that's what we ask you to do. I'm not twisting anybody's arms and asking them to believe anything we say here. We try to give you as much fact as we can, and it's up to you to do your own research and figure out what's what. You know, when it comes to the political structure and the police state and all that, I mean, we could show facts all day long on that stuff. But when it comes to the things that John and I are talking about tonight, it really takes some research, and John's done his research, no doubt about it. John, I want to ask you something. I don't know if you know about this or not, but, you know, often people will bring up the third secret of Fatima. Do you believe, or do you know, or have you heard from anybody that that secret had something to do with what we're discussing tonight?
I'm glad you brought that up. I just wrote a report about that, and I posted it today. I'm trying to find the article that I have. Well, I can quote it for you. The Third Secret of Fatima, this sounds fantastic, but in 1917, three peasant girls in Fatima, Portugal, saw a vision, and it sounds kind of hokey, or questionable anyway, but when you look at what the secret was, or other girls who have had similar visions, then you begin to see that there is a great deal of credibility in it. I do believe that the third secret of Fatima was indeed given by an angel of God to these girls back in 1917, and the third secret was, well, led up to the very chronological end of the world. In order to present, to give us solid credibility for that third secret of Fatima, I'd like to quickly go over the girls in Garibaldo of Spain, Garibaldo, Spain, 1964. These four sisters, young girls, were out picking apples in a field. It was clear skies. All of a sudden, there was a loud boom, like thunder, very loud, like a bomb. One of the girls, whom I have on videotape, testifies, on a clear day it sounded like a bomb. And all of a sudden, one of the girls falls to her knees in a trance, and the other girls think that she's ill and go to run for help, but all of a sudden they fall to their knees also in a trance, and they are spoken to by an angel. They've had many of these experiences. They woke up from the trance and went back running excitedly to their families and to the townsfolk, and told them that they had seen what they call the angel. And there were many such experiences where they were spoken to by this angel. And there was actually films. We see videotapes from a documentary that was made showing films of the girls when they were in this trance-like state, sort of like the same state that Edgar Casey was in when a spirit, I believe the spirit of God, gave him this power to heal people and to predict the future. He even said it was from God. Well, there was one night when the girls of Garibaldi told the townsfolk who were filming them, "We want to be left alone. We're being told that there's something serious is going to be told to us by the angels." Well, it was called a night of screams. These girls were horrified at the vision that was given to them by the angel. And the person who recounts it, this woman who has studied and interviewed the children, says that they said several things, but one of the things they said the angels told them was that at some time during these future disasters, no electric motor anywhere in the world would be operable. Now, that sounds like a very irrelevant and peculiar prophecy for a girls to be relating. So it sounds like they did not make it up, like it was indeed given to them by some metaphysical spirit. No electric motor will operate at a certain time. Well, I immediately picked up on it because of my knowledge of physics and electricity and magnetism and how that relates to this incoming gravitational magnetic body, Planet X. And I realized that what happens is this object is, we discussed earlier, when any kind of a comet penetrates the outer heliosphere surrounding our solar system, that electrified gaseous heliosphere, the electrified protons, electric protons and the gas, which comprise the gas, cling to this incoming body, and now this body is saturated with positive electric charge, plasma. And that's what forms the tail of the comet, and it has a glowing tail because it's electrified. Now, when it comes in, because it's moving electric charge, anytime you have moving electric charge, you have an electromagnetic field that is generated, that billows out around the path of that moving charged object. So when Planet X comes in, or one of its accompanying gravitationally captured comets, they're all saturated with plasma, a magnetic field billows out around the flight path of this incoming comet, just as a chemtrail would billow out around the flight path of an airplane. Now, this billowing invisible magnetic field expands greater and greater in size as it passes in the flight path, like a chemtrail. And this magnetic field then engulfs the entire Earth, and it penetrates Earth the way it cuts through Earth, in the same way that a ghost would walk through a wall or pass through a wall. And the entire Earth is engulfed with this powerful magnetic field from this moving, massive, charged body. And as a result, all the electric fields, the electric fields individually created within each motor on the Earth, the thousands of electric motors, all those electric fields would be canceled out, wiped out, erased, nullified by this massive Earth-engulfing magnetic field from this passing space body. And that is how, very logically, based upon physics, all electric motors on Earth could be made inoperable. There is no way that these unschooled peasant girls could have made this up. Clearly, this prophecy that every motor, electric motor on Earth would become inoperable must have been given to them by an angel of God.
Now, yeah, that would be kind of like an EMP, wouldn't it?
Sort of, yeah, an electromagnetic, right. Mm-hmm. And rather than being a pulse, yeah, it's a burst. An EMP would be an electromagnetic burst, you're right. And that, as we know, would destroy all electronics that are unshielded. So this, to me, yeah, this presents clear evidence to anyone, any unbiased, observer, that these girls were actually given visions and messages by a metaphysical being, an angel of God. Now, only God would speak to people and warn them about the destruction that God says in the Bible that he himself is creating, will create, because mankind has drifted from him. So it makes perfect sense to me that all this is ordained by God, because the angels warn that this is going to happen. And furthermore, the research that this woman did, who relates what the testimony that she got from interviewing these women, and one of them was still alive and testifying. In fact, there's a couple of them that are still alive, because it was only 1964 in Garibandal. They say that this will come from God. The angel told them this is a chastisement from God, and also that there would come a time when there will be a great, this is kind of harrowing and scary to think about. They say there would come a time when there will be a great thirst all around the world, and people will attempt to kill one another. Now, they didn't relate the great thirst to people attempting to kill one another. They just related what they heard. A great thirst, and people will attempt to kill one another. I deduce that what that is, what that means is, they will be so thirsty that they will kill each other just to drink their blood.
That's what I was thinking.
It's horrible. It's really so. And in the Bible, it's sad to say, but in the Old Testament, God promises to do these kinds of things, to force people to get, make them so hungry, they will actually cannibalize one another. But it sounds like a very cruel God that people don't want to accept.
Does.
But then if you had a judge that said to you, look, if you commit this crime, you're going to jail for life. I don't like that judge, but I better darn well take him seriously. Same thing with God. Now, God says, hey, I'll die for you. I am dying. I will die for you. I have died for you so that you won't have to take the punishment that my perfection requires. I will take your punishment, and I will, even at the last moment of your life, if you call out to me, I will save you. That's the greatest love and graciousness that anyone could ever expect. So you have both extremes with God. You have the willingness to forgive up to and accept and embrace and give eternal life up to the very last moment before the destruction of the world. And if that is rejected, if God's calling is rejected right up to the end, then comes the harsh chastisement.
Well, he won't get no resistance from me, that's for sure.
Not from me either. When I was a belligerent atheist, and I was suddenly in fear for my life, I actually spoke to God. And that's something that no, even so-called good Christians don't really do. They pretend to pray, but they don't really believe that God is there listening. Well, to a certain extent they do, but, you know, it's kind of half-hearted. But me, a belligerent atheist, boy, I'll tell you, I knew God with a strong feeling of companionship at that moment of terror.
Yeah. You know, I've had out-of-body experiences that, you know, and I'm so thankful that I had them, because they helped me realize, you know, I always believed that we were more than this physical body, but that really confirmed it for me. And, you know, I've had some situations where I should be dead right now, and I'm not. You know, I had my own little miracles. So, you know, for me, I'm a believer. There is definitely a higher power. And, you know, for those who don't believe, well, you're going to get quite a surprise. That's all I could say.
So you had that, you saw that miracle, and you know, it's, I really believe from my own experience that God will save somebody. When I was, you know, once I woke up that morning in Vietnam and the sun was shining, I forgot all about God and the promise that I made to him. when I was in terror, in fear. But for years thereafter, I forgot about God and continued being a belligerent atheist. And then one time I was driving back from Florida, and my car was loaded with all my belongings. It was a tiny matchbox Toyota Corolla on the Garden State Parkway in the center lane, and the truck didn't see me because my car was so small. Went to change lanes, hit my rear fender, and put my car into a spin, like spin the bottle, on the center lane of the very busy New Jersey Turnpike. I should have been killed. I was just spinning around, getting dizzy. I don't know how many times I spun, maybe just once or twice. And instinctively, I did something crazy. I didn't know what else to do. I just threw the clutch in to the floor. Well, that must have caused the spin to be intensified the spin because there was no more braking action of the drivetrain from the wheels. The wheels were now free rolling. And that intensified the spin, the motion of the car so that the wheels could freely move. And that threw me off in a tangent out of that spin into through the traffic in the right lane, in between cars, into a ditch where I finally came to rest without rolling and no injuries whatsoever. That was
wow.
An obvious miracle. An angel of God saved me. And even then I remained an atheist, even after that, for years, until finally God drew me. Not, it wasn't me, but it was circumstances in my life where God brought me to recognize him and to embrace him, his spirit. Well, anyway, here's some evidence that shows you, scientific evidence of the acknowledgement by our government of Planet X. Before they said, hold it, put a lid on that, don't talk about that anymore, our wonderful evil national security agency that we're hearing so much about told NASA, because they control all the government agencies, they told NASA, stop putting out these reports, do not mention Planet X anymore. How do I know that? Well, I can deduce that that's what they told NASA, because once they had discovered Planet X, and I've got the newspaper articles which I photocopied from my county library proving that they were out, they knew Planet X was there, they went to look for it, they found it, they discovered it, they heralded it in major newspapers, and then they were told to shut up and don't say any more about it. And ever since then, the subject has been blacked out. There's more proof that that Planet X does exist, because when you have a cover-up, the cover-up itself is more compelling proof of the crime. The cover-up of the crime is compelling proof, like with the Kennedy assassination. They went through such elaborate cover-ups that, and as Jim Marrs, the great Kennedy assassination researcher and author, Jim Marrs says, the totality of the cover-up evidence itself is so great that the cover-up in itself proves that he was assassinated by a high-level conspiracy. Well, anyway, here's the cover. The cover-up was for many years. But here's the original article that was issued. Well, I've got four articles that were issued back in 1983. New York Times, January 30th, 1983, title, Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X. This is the actual article photocopied from the New York Times. Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X by John Noble Wilford. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought Planet X. Evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. They are devoting more time to visual observations with the 200-inch telescope at Mount Palomar in California. They are tracking two Pioneer spacecraft now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto to see if variations in their trajectories provide clues to the source of this mysterious force. And incidentally, those two Pioneer spacecraft indeed reported, transmitted back, radio transmitted back to NASA, their trajectory deviation, the deviation from their trajectory, which would have been caused by a massive object. Those space probes, Pioneer 10 and 11, Pioneer 10 was sent out to the point in space, in deep space, beyond Pluto, the point where the scientists and astronomers had calculated that this massive force existed, gravitational body existed, pulling on the orbital paths of the planets Uranus and Neptune. So now they simply sent out the probes to that point where their calculations said it would be. And indeed, the deviations, the gravitational pull, deviated or drifted that space probe, Pioneer 10, off of its orbit, off its trajectory. And so I'll continue reading. So we have evidence right there. And they're hoping that a satellite-borne telescope launched last week will detect heat signatures from this planet or whatever it is out there. The infrared astronomical satellite was boosted into a 560-mile high polar orbit, probably around the South Pole orbit, Tuesday night from Vandenberg Air Force Base, California. It represents an $80 million venture by the United States, Britain, and the Netherlands. So here you had three nations basically looking for this object, three governments, three space agencies, all knowing that this object, which they have named, it's not a science fiction name made up by a bunch of, people with a
That's
matter.
Right.
Imaginative people, but it is a name officially given, Planet X, given by Percival Lowell, a famed astronomer who constructed an observatory back around 1910 to find this object, and he called the object Planet X. And NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration of the United States government itself, has continued calling it Planet X in their internal documents, one of which is titled The Search for Planet X, which you can find now on the Internet. It's no longer, somehow it's been leaked out. But anyway, three nations knew about it. So Netherlands, the United States, and Britain, they've sent up this infrared astronomical satellite. Quote, in the next 6 or 7 months, this telescope is expected to conduct a wide-ranging survey of nearly all the sky, detecting sources not of ordinary light, but of infrared radiation, which is invisible to the human eye and largely absorbed by the atmosphere. Scientists thus hope that the new telescope will chart thousands of infrared-emitting objects that have gone undetected, stars, interstellar clouds, asteroids, and, with any luck, this object that pulls at Uranus and Neptune. And it goes on and on. It talks about how, I'll just paraphrase, how even back in the early 1800s, this astronomers noticed that when they discovered Uranus and Neptune, Uranus was discovered in 1781. Imagine that. And though they noticed perturbations, that there were irregularities at a certain point in the orbit of these planets, and they correctly assumed that it was caused by a gravitational body far out. So you could not see it, but you could see the gravitational pull that it was exerting on these outer planets. And that's why they knew it existed. So, and this goes on to say that Clyde Tombaugh was a famous astronomer who discovered Pluto. He was looking for Planet X, and he accidentally discovered Pluto. He was at the Lowell Observatory in 1930. Percival Lowell's observatory, and discovered Pluto. Well, they said, well, Pluto's too small, but it's nice that you discovered it, but it's too small to be this massive gravitationally pulling object that we're looking for. So they continued to search for it. And this article says, I'm getting close to the end of the other article. I skipped quite a bit to save time. Quote, recent calculations by the United States Naval Observatory have confirmed the orbital perturbation exhibited by Uranus and Neptune, which Dr. Thomas C. Van Flandern, an astronomer at the observatory, says could be explained by, quote, a single undiscovered planet, unquote. He and a colleague, Dr. Robert Harrington, incidentally, he's dead, and many people believe Dr. Harrington was murdered because he was about to reveal telescopic images of an incoming Planet X. He died very rapidly. Again, many people believe he was murdered. And I can give you more evidence about to indicate that he was murdered.
Okay, we've got about 6 minutes, John, so go right ahead. I want to hear it.
Okay, in the obituary, when he died, just before he was about to reveal this telescopic images that he had taken of Planet X to determine, is it there? Yes, it was there. Is it incoming? We believe yes. He was about to release this to the world. He never got a chance. In January 1992, he died of rapid onset cancer in a matter of a couple weeks. They give people cancer. This is well known. It's a nice way to kill people without making it seem like it was foul play. Well, why was not the information revealed? Why were not the photographic evidence revealed to the public showing this planet? It was concealed. There's evidence right there that he was murdered. Even if the man died of natural causes, they still should have released the photographs of Planet X, but they didn't want anybody to know about it. And the subject was blacked out in the press for the last 30 years, ever since the discovery of it. Another thing, they did an obituary. The U.S. Naval Observatory did an obituary for their chief astronomer, Dr. Robert S. Harrington. And they said in the obituary, they really incriminated themselves by saying this. Oh, at the end of his career, Bob Harrington really lost all interest in Planet X, which, as we know, is a complete lie. It's a gross lie, because this was the pursuit of this man's life. I mean, any astronomer would have considered that the greatest discovery in history. And Dr. Harrington devoted his whole life to that pursuit. So we know that somebody from the NSA, you know, the U.S. Naval Observatory, they're not a bunch of spies and spooks. They would not do something like that. But some creep from the NSA got in there and said, throw this into the report, because we don't want them to think that Harrington died because he discovered this Planet X. So throw this little comment in there. Say, oh, Bob lost all interest in Planet X during the last year or so of his life. Well, by saying that, making that unsolicited comment, which was unbelievable, they incriminated themselves. And this shows another, to me, is quite clear, to many people, quite clear evidence that he was murdered. So they kill people over this. And others have been murdered too.
And I'll tell you, John, talking with you tonight, you've piqued my interest again, where I want to go back and look at different things and see if I can find anything else. I mean, boy, I wish somebody could get their hands on those pictures and release them. But
nobody will. Michael, I have to tell you real quickly. Here's something. You mentioned the Fatima. Okay. The girls at Fatima, what happened was one of the sisters, the others died of the swine flu, Spanish flu of 1917, 1918. But one survived, Lucia. She became a nun. Now, there's photographic evidence, and I just put a report out. Someone was doing research. Not only someone, an informant of mine that I spoke with a few years ago, but somebody else, Marion Horvat, put out a report showing photographic evidence that absolutely proves that this sister Lucia, which became a nun and became very aged and lived in a cloistered convent until she died, supposedly died just a few years ago, she was not the real sister Lucia. She was a phony sister Lucia. And that phony sister Lucia, existed for many years. The real Sister Lucia probably was murdered in the early 1940s. She was told to be quiet and never mention a word about that third secret of Fatima to anyone except to the Vatican. Evidently, photographic evidence that I posted today from Marion Horvat shows that the Sister Lucia that the church has represented as being, you know, the girl who saw the was given the message of the third secret is a phony. You've got to see that report. It's fantastic.
Yeah, please, if you think about it, if you can remember, please send it to me. And, you know, and
yeah,
also send me links to the articles you spoke of, and I'll post them. But I have a couple of questions from the chat if we can get a quick answer.
Okay.
One is, where is Planet X right now? And the other is, are you aware of the large black triangle object in the sun?
Where's Planet X? I don't know. I mean, only NASA knows. I mean, we have many of us believe that it's in the. We're not sure, but we just have surmised based upon lots of evidence that it's probably in the outer solar system, making a big U-turn around the sun. We know, getting ready to make a big U-turn and go over the top of the sun. We know that this object is being pulled in by the sun. Now it is overshot. We believe it's at some point it's going to overshoot the sun because it's got momentum. And when it overshoots the sun, it's like a boy running past you, a boy wearing suspenders. And he's running past you, and you go to grab him from the back, pulling his suspenders back, right? What are you going to do? What's going to happen to his speed? He's going to decelerate because he's running away from you, and you're grabbing him from the back of his suspenders. You're pulling him backward, he's going to decelerate. That's exactly what happens as this object overshoots the sun. Then instead of the sun pulling it toward it and accelerating it, now the sun is pulling it back because it overshot, and it's decelerating it, and now it makes a big looping U-turn around the sun. That's going to take several years. According to the people in Edgar Cayce and Atlantis, who went into a trance and saw what happened in the past thousands of years ago when the same destruction occurred in Atlantis. There were two destructions separated by a period of years. I believe that period of years was 3.5 years, the same time that's predicted by the Bible as being the rule, the period of rule and reign by the global Antichrist, 3.5 years. The first passage is going to be the destruction when it comes over Earth's pass on its way over the top of the sun. It's going to cause a certain amount of destruction. Then it goes over the top of the sun, and it has to pass over Earth's orbital path a second time. I believe my speculation is that it's 3.5 years between the first passage on its way over the top of the sun to the second passage over Earth on its way after it passes over the top of the sun and back out. 3.5 years. It's making a U-turn, and we don't know where it is right now, but it's probably, from our best guess, in the distance, making that big U-turn out around Saturn someplace, because we're seeing storms on Saturn. All right, and that's sort of circumstantial evidence. I'm not sure about this. So there's the sun. There is an object called Ison, and Marshall Masters has actually photographs of it that were taken before the observatory in Costa Rica was shut down, where people were photographs were prohibited after Marshall Masters had captured this photograph of this object. It's very compelling. It's absolutely there. Yeah. And that's the object that looks like an object near the sun. I think that's what
you're
referring
to. All right. Well, John, thank you. Anything, any website or what have you that you want to get out, by all means, go ahead. And let me just thank you so much. I've really enjoyed tonight's conversation.
Well, the website is The Light of Day Radio Show, thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on the Planet X logo.
Oh. Well, that's, okay, go ahead, John. Sorry about that. I didn't do that.
It's okay. Click on the Planet X logo at thelightofdayradioshow.com.
Okay. All right, will do. Thank you so much, John. I do appreciate having you on. And please send me that information by email, and I'll share it with all the listeners.
Thanks so much
all
for
right.
having me,
thank
Michael.
You. Okay, well, thank you, John. I appreciate you taking the time out. And everybody, John DiNardo is linked up over on LateNightInTheMidlands.com. I'll tell you, you know, when he puts it out the way he has, you just cannot, you can't deny it. I mean, there's something out there. Where it is, I like his answer. I mean, who really knows right now? The government and NASA. So that's a question that can't be answered. And that's why when people say, well, it's going to come tomorrow, it's going to come next week, I don't really believe they know exactly when it's going to come. But one thing we do know for sure, that it's not a matter of if, it is a matter of when. And with that, I want to thank each and every one of you, wherever it is you may be around the globe, in the chat room or on the phone lines. This has been a broadcast of Late Night in the Midlands on the LNM Radio Network. Keep your eyes posted to the sky, because you never know what you might see. Keep your ears posted to this broadcast, because you never know what you might learn. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. And, well, you've got Rascala tomorrow night, and I'll be back with you Monday. Good night, everybody.